The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
And Louise Galvin is with us to chat rugby. How are you, Louise?
Morning, Owen. I'm good.
So the questions surrounding Ireland's attack have very much reared their heads again over the course of this campaign so far in the Six Nations. Can I just begin by asking if you can see any clear attacking plan from Mike Catt and Ireland in general at the moment?
Yeah, I actually think, Owen, what's a bit interesting this week has been some of the sound bites that have nearly come out of the camp when Mike Catt was put up for the media duties at the start of the week. He's certainly kind of alluded to more almost player decision-making roles. So I think one of the difficulties with the Irish attack is transitioning from the Schmidt era, which is very much didactorial, and this is the way we're playing, and these are this is the trend we're going to set. We're going to hit a rock here, then we're going to, you know, kick, line out, power play, whatever we're going to do. To, I think, in this Andy Farrell, Mike Catt era, or Mike Catt, particularly from the attack point of view, he's trying to maybe put a bit onus back on the players that they're not going to be as prescriptive of where in the field there's going to be a line out, but what he wants is more kind of a decision makers, and not only from 9 and 10, which is, again, what we've been so used to, that the game is primarily controlled by Johnny Sexton, and on top of that, Conor Murray at 9, but that we're getting a lot more, communication and maybe a bit more demanding of the ball from our centres and our back three. And I think where he might have been a bit, disappointed, he didn't quite go that far, but from maybe I'm reading too much into his comments. I know it's infamous now that that line-out turnover that we had early on in the French game, and we see Billy Burns with a full back line careering towards him, and the French, you know, backfield obviously expecting that they were going to be in attack. And instead of going through the hands, we just kicked the ball. We could put the blame there on Billy Burns' decision-making, but as well, are we hearing from Robbie Henshaw, from, you know, I'm not sure, was it Keith Earls? I think we might have been the blind wing at that stage. From James Lowe, we want the ball. Because previously, they would have been just maybe letting Johnny Sexton make all those decisions and not feeding in as much. Because I think with Mike Catt and Andy Farrell, without talking too much about specific structure, I think what they do want more of this kind of a heads-up rugby. We're just transitioning away from a period of it being very, very much thought out and dictated by a certain pattern that maybe a Joe Schmidt wants to play.
Does it look as though there's a confidence issue there as well? Because I guess to play heads up rugby, you need to believe in yourself. And even listening to Graham Hunter there talking about Diego Simeone at Atletico Madrid, that even still with all his experience, when things aren't going well, he reverts to type, he becomes more conservative. And this Irish group now have had 2 years of a pretty tough time where results haven't gone their way. That the what Mike Catt and Andy Farrell may want them to do, the players just don't have the belief to do it right now. And how do you fix something like that?
When you are in a really heavily structured environment, even though as maybe 18, 19, 20 year old or early 20s, you very much got to that level by playing off the cuff and playing off your ability and your, natural instinct. If you then enter a very, very structured, high performance environment, it can be hard to break out of that this is your role, that often, you know, these environments that have a massive amount of clarity around what your role is, it's kind of hard to step out of that box a little bit. And I think, Nathan, there is a little bit of that. I'm not sure. I suppose if you want to be to players out in the centre channels, out in the back three channels, demanding a ball, well, maybe in previous eras, they want to make sure there's a completely positive outcome. Whereas now there's probably a bit more of let's play with this. I think even saw it the last day, there was a bit more maybe, if you see the likes of Jamie Gibson-Park and James Lowe, they're more likely to try the off-the-cuff type of play, or maybe shooting down a blindside. But again, if only two players are doing that and everyone else isn't reacting, or it might not always be at the correct time of the game, then it looks like a negative possession. Whereas if you've everyone kind of singing off that same hymn sheet and anticipating that this might happen, then it can turn into a positive possession or set piece of possession. But when you're just so used to that structured micromanaged play, it's hard to break out of it.
And structured micromanaged play off 9 and off 10. And it's interesting listening to you speak there that there's probably a bit more of an expectation on the out after just produce everything. The entire conversation for the last 2 weeks has been about, can we get Jack Carty back in the team? Should Harry Byrne be given his opportunity? Whereas maybe more questions need to be asked of the other backs and the heads up rugby that they need to be playing.
Yeah, and I think that's what Mike Cash ended up saying really in the end, without I don't think he was trying to point any fingers, but that he kind of suggested that that's what he's looking for, and what Andy Farrell is looking for, is that the centres, the fullback, the wingers demanding more of the ball, taking more of the pressure off 9 and 10. Because look, whatever way this comes about, whether it's messy, whether it's clear cut, whether we see Johnny Sexton playing one more season, whether we see him going into an off the bench role, no matter what, whatever 10 is going to come in is not going to be incredibly experienced. He's not going to have 20 plus caps. So he's going to need a bit of extra support. And we've spoken about this from the last World Cup, about this second playmaker role anyway, and how the best teams have been using it, whether it's New Zealand, whether it's England when they play Farrell and Ford, and when they're firing in all cylinders. I think it's something we need to evolve anyway, because it'll always give you, particularly in a midfield ruck, two sides of an attack. If you have a 15 or a 13 or 12 who's very much used to, and the team use them as a first receiver, and a 10 splitting on the other side of the field, well, automatically a defensive team are going to kill their line speed just a little bit, because they're not exactly sure where the ball is going. But in Ireland's case, you know, if you've the last few years Johnny Sexton at 10, 80-90% of the time it's going to the side of the field he's on, and which probably has a stacked back line as well,
which is just a dream for any defence if you know exactly where the ball is going to come through. This old chestnut as well, Louise, has come up this week of Ireland's inability to offload, and Andy Dunn was on the show during the week and detailed the statistics around this and how it's dreadfully low, and he just wants to see just a little bit more offloading. How easy is it for Ireland to implement this? How good are these players that offloading should be a minimum expectation?
Yeah, I was listening to Andy. I think he said one offload in 54 carries. First of all, you can't just flip a switch and become an offloading team, because there is almost a mindset about it. And oftentimes it's the ball carrier themselves. So you need to make sure you stay square, you get through the contact, but you also have that ball free and available, ideally with two hands, and that you can then turn your body around, your upper body, so that you can really see the supporting players. But the supporting players are actually crucial, because again, it's not to blame Joe Schmidt, he got us to the highest ranking we've ever had in the world. We beat the All Blacks, obviously, and he picked a strategy that he thought could get us to that point. Now we need to evolve a little bit. So the supporting players in the Joe Schmidt era, which was a massive collision possession statistic game, was always to clear out massive accuracy, massive numbers of ruck sealing the ball. If you want to create an offloading game, well, your supporting players, they need to be in a position where, yeah, they can come in and they can seal and protect that ball, but they can also be in an offloading position. And you see France do it naturally. Like, we would have, even with the women's French seven squad, we would have done a lot of training camps with them, and they just do constant drills where they call it in the axe. Now, I never knew whether it was AXE or ACT, but they just work so much that you have two players after any contact. This might be kind of half contact, half live contact, that you have two players running off you, and their primary goal is to get an offload, and their secondary goal is to seal the ball if they need to, or in some way to get that ball away from the contact zone and play it to the next supporting player. Whereas that's not necessarily a mentality of the Irish game, neither in the provinces or in the national squad. And it is in the French game. Now, it's always high risk. We're not going to turn into the Fiji overnight. But again, it's the mentality of your carrier first and foremost, but your supporting players. Because we often see it where a carrier gets through, gets their hands free, they go to offload, and if it's not on, they end up popping it off their supporting player's chest, who's actually just coming in low to seal over the ball. So if the supporting player is not expecting it, if they're not in the same mindset, and if they're not in a better position, then the offload isn't on. So that's, you know, is one way to start doing it. But again, it's not going to happen overnight, Owen, because it's almost like a completely different mindset. The threat then is that if the offload isn't given to the support player and they overrun the line, well, then you're a huge jackal threat for the opposition, which is, I can imagine why someone like Joe Schmidt thought this isn't a natural part of Ireland's game. And I think percentage-wise, we're not going to start introducing it now.
By the sounds of it, Joe Schmidt still looms large over Irish rugby then.
Well, I think I actually, think from listening to Mike Hatt and Andy Farrell last week, without directly saying it, that they're kind of nearly saying we have players who are excellent players, but they're almost afraid to demand the ball, or they're not stepping up to make these decisions because they're so used to such a strategy, micromanaged, structured play. I think if me reading between the lines, that's what I'm hearing from within the camp, and they're trying to break out of this, I suppose, stranglehold that Joe had. And again, Joe had a massively successful squad. It dipped before the World Cup, but we were all absolutely singing his praises for what he did achieve.
How long does that take? Very briefly, Louise, I know you have to go. How long does that take for that transition to be complete?
Owen, I don't know. I guess, because another interesting thing is, you know, does it have to start within the provinces? So that, like, when you come, I was listening to a podcast with Eddie Jones last week, and he was saying, you know, you get to elite level rugby, you're not coaching skills anymore. You're talking about your strategies or the way you want to play the game, and you're making sure you have the right people in the right positions, the right places. So should this all be done at the provinces, at Ireland under 20s level, schools level, and that they're starting to almost introduce this as part of a national strategy, and to a certain extent, as I say, within the academies and up through the provinces, so that when you come to a national team, there's a willingness to try and offload. We're not, as I say, we're not going to turn into Fiji, we're not going to turn into France overnight. But I think another thing with that is that we're trying to get as much of our centres, because we have, I mean, Gary Ringrose, Robbie Henshaw have been playing pretty well as individuals, but that we're getting them to step up a little bit more. Hugo Keenan, he probably has the stability of knowing he's going to be 15 for the rest of the campaign, that they have the, I suppose, confidence and the wherewithal to step up a little bit more, to take a bit of pressure off that 10, whether it's more than likely going to be Johnny against Italy, or whether it's Ross Byrne or Billy Burns that's stepping onto the park, because I think that's another major aspect that we need to develop in our play. Take the pressure off
Louise,
the 10 and the 9.
Sorry to cut across. I thought you were finishing your point there. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, no, just to take that we have a second playmaker that's willing to take the pressure off the 9 and the 10, so that we're not just having a continuous barrage of Gary Owens and box kicks that Keith Earls and James Lower just running up their GPS chasing.
Louise Galvin, as ever, great stuff. Thanks a million for taking the call.
Thanks a million.
We should chat a little bit about Johnny Sexton as well, Nathan, because this came up yesterday in Ireland's press conference. Johnny Sexton was speaking and, I guess, dropped a little bit of a bombshell that perhaps we hadn't heard him say too often before. This idea that he might not actually make it to the next World Cup. Let's just play this video, first of all, before we get into today's papers.
Nearly, but waiting on I'm nearly there, yeah, waiting on Leinster to see if Leinster want to keep me or not. They've got a few good young tens coming through, so if you look at what I said already, like, it's been other people that have sort of thrown fuel on the fire. Issa telling people that I could play till I was 40, 41. Like, I've always been in the same position. Like, I absolutely love what I do. I'm very privileged to do it, and I'm still loving it, and I'll keep playing for now, like, you know what I mean? But that has never changed, like, you know what I mean? Like, I've spoken about admiration for athletes that have stayed at the top of their game for a long time, like, but never, like, I don't, you just gotta be careful what I said or what someone else said. It can get lost a bit. But for the moment, I'm still motivated. I hope that my teammates and coaches see how motivated I am to train well every day and then to keep going. And whenever that is, like, I can't say I'm going to play for, because no one knows. You can be 24, 25 years of age and get an injury and you're finished, like, then, you know what I mean? So it's yeah, at the moment I'm contracted for this season and nearly contracted for next season. Hopefully stay and we'll see what happens.
So that was Johnny Sexton speaking yesterday, and then they come back to it in the embargo section in the press conference, which is printed in today's newspapers. He said, "What am I going to say? That I'm guaranteed to be at the next World Cup at my age?" Well, sorry, it was just a throwaway comment in terms of talking about World Cup cycles and the journey that this coaching group are on with this group of players. All I said was that this World Cup cycle would stand to us in the way that we are trying to develop. Obviously, I don't have a 3-year contract and it's season by season, so it's nothing really. So right off those comments from Johnny Sexton, Nathan.
Yeah, it's interesting that he came back and basically flipped this in the part that wasn't broadcast. And Johnny Sexton's well used to doing these press conferences. They're split in two. One part, the television cameras and the radio reporters are there. And then the next part isn't on camera and it's in the papers the next day. But every single news bulletin last night was, the top of it was the line from Johnny Sexton that I may not be around for the next World Cup because it's the main talking point in Irish rugby. And again, I understand Johnny Sexton's frustration because even if he's not around for the next World Cup, in his head, well, why should he step aside? Because that seems to be the feeling that Johnny should almost take one for the team, take one for the nation and do the right thing and almost put forward a proposal that Ross Byrne or Harry Byrne or Jack Carty should get an opportunity so they're ready in case he doesn't make it. Whereas when Johnny Sexton was on off the ball a couple of weeks ago with Jair, I think he was making the point that this could end at any stage, particularly at his age. He wants to make the most of it. So he wants to play every Six Nations game. He doesn't want a break. It's up to the coaches to make that decision. And I don't think he is that cocky that he's going to say, I'm going to definitely be there in the next World Cup. It ended up being slightly misconstrued that, well, maybe actually that one-year contract with Leinster might be his last contract. I think if he's fit, and he feels, and if he is still good enough, it's not him that's deciding he's the best 10 in Ireland, it's everybody else who's deciding it, that he'll still be there come the next World Cup. So those comments afterwards obviously changed significantly what was said, but it would be a surprise if Sexton was still there at the next World Cup. But somebody else needs to come and take that jersey off him.
Yeah, that's for sure. And it's going to be a talking point, I'd imagine, for the next little while as well. So if you heard those Johnny Sexton comments yesterday at the papers today suggesting that perhaps all is not what it seems, he's not exactly writing himself off for the World Cup just yet.
The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.